Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi everyone, it's Helen here, the voice of Azu, Enola and Laverne. Today, I'm here to tell you about Woe Begone, a podcast launched on the RQ network. Woe Begone is a weekly horror sci-fi audio drama series about the nature of power and the implications of linear time. Woe Begone follows Mike Walters, who discovers a mysterious and violent online game. What begins as an exploration of an alternate reality game with real-life consequences quickly becomes a search for the technology that makes the game possible. Each episode has a unique soundtrack composed by creator and writer Dylan Griggs. Listen to Woe Begone, spelled Woe period Begone, wherever you listen to podcasts, or check out woebegonepod.com for episodes and transcripts. Have fun and see you later.
Hello and welcome to the Rustical Gaming Podcast Q&A 2. I'm your host, Alex Newell. With me today, I have...
Ben Meredith. I've remembered how to speak.
Bryn Munro.
Lydia Nicholas.
And Helen Gould. I never forgot how to speak.
But everyone got a certain rhythm, which I quite like. We are continuing with our questions, with what I would love to say is a random system, but we've clearly proven that somehow Bryn has managed to game... So we're going to see it through, but I want it on the record that I think there's something hinky going on. Right, here we go. Question 36. For everyone, this is from Alexander. In one of the first RQG mailbags, the players talked about their view of their character and where they wanted the character to go. And I was curious how the original idea for the character has shifted over the course of the show. Was there any aspect they would have thought would have had more focus than it did? So, yeah, how does what happened compare to what you originally hoped for your characters way back when?
Well, I don't know. That was ages ago.
For listeners at home, Ben is flailing his arms in a way akin to an octopus.
No. But, yeah, seriously, I don't know. It was so long ago.
I would say as the one of the characters who had from start to finish without an interruption, I can't speak for Bryn, but I was very satisfied with Hamid's development through.
Same.
I think it holds together quite nicely.
Like, emotionally and intellectually hit all the beats I wanted to. It wasn't the story I thought I was telling in a good way. I think the story, if I'd just been free to tell it on myself, would have been much more cliched. obviously the huge change in the finale, you know, made a huge difference to all the things I'd imagined beforehand. And I never had a really clear idea of what Hamid would have done if the finale hadn't happened the way it did, as it were. I'm really happy with the ending. And hit some things I'm really glad that Hamid got to do, and, you know, like, kind of unraveling his privilege, but also recognizing it and using it in what I hope are productive ways. Fingers crossed. I very, very happy. I don't remember what I said many years ago, but I think I talked about in the previous Q&A about, you know, the things that changed and stuff that I noticed as we went along for Hamid. And certainly a lot of the intentions I had did play out in a way that I at least partially wanted them to, but also with improvements and differences that I'm really glad happened.
Well, I have to admit, I do separate in my head, if we're talking about from the start of the show, like episode one Hamid and then episode three Hamid, where I think episode three Hamid to the end has a nice clear arc, and episode one was a bit of a rude awakening for you are not a playboy.
Yeah,
even
I mean,
though it wanted to be.
We still talk about that whole thing, and it's like that was We dropped that within the first 10 episodes. That's less than 5% of the show. It's just not... I don't think it's that big a deal anymore. For that first 5% of the show, I had a very different idea. It didn't work. We dropped it correctly. And, you know, I think, honestly, for me, from episode 11 onwards...
Yeah, I'd
say
that's
fair. It's coherent and great, is my kind of own opinion of it. And I feel like...
We all had a bit of a warm-up.
Basically, yeah.
I mean, let's not forget, Zolf was very key to buckets as a solution to any and all problems in the early days.
Well, that was when, when I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to have sort of like casual sacrifices a thing, because again, it's weird and let's explore what faith does. And then I did it and everyone was like, whoa, okay, maybe this is a bit darker than we'd intended. So maybe just tone that down, which is, why it came up once. And then has never come up again except in, like, jokes.
And then we came full circle at the end to, you know, basically meeting an extraplanar entity that also needed a good bucketing.
It's true.
I think Azu had the subtlest arc in some ways, where I see it and I recognise it, but I think it will pass some people by, because as all of Azu's arc comes in the contradiction between the said and unsaid, which is what changed.
Yeah, she's so quiet. And I honestly have surprised myself with that. Because the thing is, because I wrote her to be like quite similar to me, but actually during playing her, I'd be like, oh, we're actually extremely different. Like, we both care about people and we want to like make things better, but everything else is real different. She's like maybe... She is kind of like a teenage me, but like without the wildness of being a teenager, if that makes any sense. Like, she's not as stupid as I was as a teenager.
I genuinely think of her as your older axe-wielding sister.
I don't know. I'd thought that she would be a lot more kind of driven and authoritative and ambitious. But that's just not how the first episode with her went. So I just dropped it all like a hot potato. And I was like, okay, so she's awkward and happy to go along with what other people would like. And, you know.
But that's good improv.
Yeah.
There's a phrase, like, again, bleep it, but this is the technical phrase, is there's a rule in improv, which is drop your shit, which is you're going to go in going, right, I'll do this, it'll happen. And then it's like 3 seconds in, it's already gone wrong if you do that.
Yeah.
Drop your shit.
I mean, the original backstory I sent you was quite serious.
But it worked. It was very grounded, was my takeaway. Not so much serious as it was very like... I don't know what the word is. It wasn't high flown. It wasn't like, and while at this billionaire's party, they discovered the source of vibranium. It was a little bit more, you know.
Yeah, it was all very small
Look,
stuff.
Look, sometimes you want that to be your backstory.
Yeah, all of her stuff was just very sort of personal and intimate and like real stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rather like, and you're, of course, part of this is probably because I hadn't listened to any of the show before, so I had no idea what the rest of you had lined up. I had no idea that there was like someone who was going to be a dragon and someone who had like grown up in like a criminal gang who had mysterious parents. And
I love that you didn't know that stuff, and I'm really glad that you committed to that at the start.
Yes,
because it made it far more interesting.
Yeah, so I just
we kept explaining the plot to you.
Oh, that was a favourite moment, Grizzop recapping.
No, that was so weird.
Yeah! Oh, God, I forgot that.
Yeah, that was really good. But yeah, so in terms of the character growth, there was that one episode where I immediately realised that everything I thought she was going to be will not happen. And then there was like the slow realisation through the improv of like, okay, so how is she actually going to react? What would she actually do if she is this realistic sweetheart?
On a character note, I didn't expect Wilde to stick around, actually.
Ooh.
That's a fun one. So I introduced Wilde as someone who I thought might be recurring but not persistent. So by that I mean introduce them in a bit and then they kind of disappear for a while and then they rear their head and you're like, oh, good to see you again, and then they disappear again. Mm. However... You learn to spot when something works and when it doesn't. So all I did is, I can't even remember who it was, there was going to be a different character who would have filled that contact role. And I was like, you bring nothing to the table. Go away. Be gone with you. Right, Wilde, you're that person. But we're talking like first two episodes that Wilde was around. I was still like, he might just kind of bounce on, but it occasionally the planets align, you know what I mean? So
I blame James for that. I think the decision to for Bertie to bang Wilde kind of made him, like, it entwined him with the party in a way that, like, Haringey wasn't. Haringey we just kind of chatted to and it was fine and, like, whatever, he gave us some quests. But immediately Wilde became enmeshed in, like, our personal lives as well as the plot.
Yeah, I'd have done more with, like, Wilde and Harrison Campbell, I think, if Wilde hadn't have been sort of drawn in as, like, an obvious parallel. But, yeah, I'm happy with how it turned out, but I definitely wasn't in the very first iteration. Like, again, same as Bryn with Hamid, where it's, like, first couple of episodes, I was like, this is not... Yeah, okay. Yeah, all right, it'll be this thing instead, and I'm glad it did, but was slightly different.
I think for my two characters, Sasha sort of played out almost as expected, like not exactly, not in a kind of rigidly plotted way, but similar to kind of Hamid went in with an idea. I think we've even mentioned earlier on that there were like several paths that she could take, and it was like, does Sasha become Batman?
Oh yeah, yeah, I
remember. And that's
this.
The kind of, that's the bad route. That's the kind of, does Sasha continually isolate herself, and like, does she take the damage? The emotional damage there is obviously took a lot of magical and physical damage. But like, does she take that and turn it into kind of anger and drive, or does she learn to connect? And there were tipping points, I think, very much, where like she kind of shrank off and then people went and sought her out. There were several paths I saw forward, and I was really interested to see how the world and the other characters and their interactions and everything took her. And like, you know, Cell was just fun. Like, so I had a lot of like stuff going on, but I kind of did expect them to have a romantic storyline, partly because I went in with Sasha saying like, it's not necessarily that she doesn't do romance, it's that I'm not going to play romance in this thing.
Yeah.
But with Cell, so I had a lot of like pent up, like, so let's do some awkward romance scenes. And really, all of that had to come out in like one line, which did fortunately make Alex turn purple.
I told you, Alex doesn't have the tools equipped to deal with that. I'm stumbling even thinking about it. What I would say, though, is it's popped into my head. Here's a scene that would have been fascinating to see, which is Chaucer and Sasha, given Sasha's experience dealing with a chronic undead condition.
Oh, yeah.
That would have been a really interesting scene. No idea where it would go, but that would have been a really interesting pairing. Okay. Let's see where we go. We are at... Ooh, it's a high-level one. 5.
Ooh.
I'm surprised this is asked so much, but at the same time makes sense. What were Figgis and Mr. Ceiling supposed to be called? Okay, so the Figgis one... fun fact, there's a lot of times where my notes just say the words wing it. Figgis as a character was just wing it. I think it's important as a GM to make sure that you have elements of chaos that you can't control, because they become tools that you can bring out. Figgis was never meant to return and pretend to be Byron, but the second that that there was an oddity, I was like, that's fun. Pluck that from the ether and use it. Mr. Ceiling, I'm going to expose how much of an arse I am. Mr. Ceiling was going to be, if someone didn't name Mr. Ceiling was going to do what Mr. Ceiling did best, which is pick up a name from the way people were referring to it. Because all of Mr. Ceiling's thing was like, you know, repeating back whatever was said and just learning the worst lesson possible. Like, that was the whole Mr. Ceiling bit. So if you'd have just kept saying, you know, it's listening to us, it would have just called itself it. If you'd have called it that monstrosity, it would have gone... I'm that monstrosity. Aww. Like, it would have. I explicitly was just going to adopt whatever moniker emerged. Like, that was always written in. So the fact that it was Mr. Ceiling did play into my hands. I'll admit, wasn't the one I was expecting. I was expecting something like It, or, you know, something a bit more like
ominous,
dark and thematic.
Ominous, yeah. But no, missed the ceiling. Fine. I'm glad it came out that way. To be clear, it did what it was supposed to. But that's what I talk about, where like have a randomizing element. Mm. Sometimes it's nice to not know, because then you can be surprised, and it's normally better. When
I think
missed
the ceiling does also kind of capture that horrifying innocence that it had, because it sounds like a children's character from a creepypasta.
Yeah, exactly. I wasn't expecting it, but like. That's the kind of title you'd never come up with yourself. But when it turns up, you're like, oh, I quite like that.
Yeah, it's very much like...
Improv is its best.
Here comes Mr. Ceiling. What horrors will he inflict today?
There is, in fact, a Leitner book.
Yeah. I'm sure
it's in the short series.
A guest for Mr. Ceiling.
Yes, it's from the interior decor suite. They didn't really make it into the main thread, but we might release them later.
That which paints the walls.
Sorry, that was the most Magnus-esque Avatar title for an interior.
I do love it.
I'm really proud of you for that.
Express mundane stuff, but in a really pretentious way. And boom, you've got an entity.
Okay, we're gonna write this shit back onto RPG. 23. How did Alex and the players approach creating various queer characters, and what did you try and pay attention to with their portrayal? How did the experience impact you? That's a very broad one. I'll reread it. How did Alex and the players approach creating various queer characters, and what did you try and pay attention to with their portrayal? How did the experience impact you?
So I can start on this because I have spoken about playing Cell quite a bit. I'd like to say that I've struggled with cisness isn't quite the right word, but for my entire life I've not fit into easily gender norms, and working out exactly how I wanted to express and talk about and label that and perform it has been, as it is for everyone, a lifelong project. I thought about playing Sasha as non-binary at the beginning, but as the character kind of developed in my head, it made a lot more sense for her to be a woman. It's hard for me to explain why, but like when I was beginning to sketch out Cell, they just didn't want to have a gender. Like I literally was writing them, and I thought of the idea of playing like a male version or a female version, and it just did not. It was like the character kind of sat up and told me who they were.
I can understand that.
It's very weird. I don't want it to sound like pretentious and profound, but it was just like, no, that makes complete sense for them. And I genuinely thought that would be part of a longer process of myself coming out as fully non-binary. But what was interesting was having the opportunity, and I really recommend people kind of try and play with these things, playing someone who was confidently and securely, I knew exactly who they were and had a very different upbringing than me, and had different formative experiences than me, kind of helped me solidify my thoughts about who I am. And my thoughts about gender as well, and how that ends up being kind of performed and experienced, at least in my case, where like I now consider myself, like I use they and she. And part of it is that for me, I know that she-ness isn't, like, it's something that I earned and worked on and like built up in solidarity with other people through experiences and all sorts of, like, something I learned, like, and I don't want to give that up now. I spent a lot of time thinking about how I could do that in a way that felt authentically me, and I don't think I would have worked all of that stuff out if I hadn't played Cell in the way that I did. So I put a lot of thought into it, essentially. And it had a big impact on me. Summarize, draw a line under that. That was it. I thought for a long time.
No, it was really cool. What's interesting for me with Azu is that from the start, like I said, I wanted her to be like me, so I made her bisexual, and I was just like, right, done and dusted, fine. But sort of as time went on, so I made sure that she had like partners of different genders and stuff like that. And then there's that bit where Azu and Cell have this conversation about like what relationships like can be, and maybe some of them can mean this, or maybe they don't have to mean anything at all, and maybe like, and that also became part of like Azu's queerness for me, because the way that I sort of treated her in like the in the epilogues, right? I figured Kiko and Azu are going to grow and age and develop at very different rates. It feels like they would naturally grow apart. And then I was like, but that doesn't mean that they have to like have no relationship at all. So I made sure that like Kiko would still be around, involved with Azu's family, part of like a broader understanding of what relationships are. And so, and then in the third epilogue, I had Chinua move in with Azu and Amir as well. And people can take that however they like. They can think it's platonic or romantic or a polycule or a thruple or whatever. But it was important then to me to show different... it just start, that conversation with Cell started me thinking of different models of relationships and how Azu might internalize that. And that's also something we've been talking about in terms of like so much of Azu's development is very quiet.
Yes.
Very just her thinking quietly and then doing things that are not as loud as what other people will be doing, but do show that she's changing because she was, And what's also interesting is that I think in my head she has a much broader understanding of like what kind of relationships she would want and be in. Whereas me personally, I now have quite a strict definition of what kind of relationship I want to be in if I was to have another romantic partner. And I'm absolutely fine being on my own without that as well. So it's like, Azu has all kinds of different partners on different levels in my head. And I'm here like, hey! and it was also interesting as well to go through my own gender journey and realize, okay, so Azu is a woman and I'm not sure I am. And that was weird because, again, built her to be like me. She's not entirely like me anymore by the end of it. So impact it's had on me is more in terms of the reflecting on what she made me think about and how I think of her now as opposed to when I started. So yeah, I started off thinking I would put no thought into it whatsoever. And yeah, as you could tell, I have just given like a small speech. So I actually have been thinking about her quite a lot.
yeah, I think for, this is Ulf's, like sort of, asexuality. It kind of, I didn't put any thought into that at all, like at the start either, because it's just not a part of, like when playing TRPGs, I don't engage with like that part of things really. And it was, you know, it was born out of like a practicality thing as well, because like I, you know, decided that I wasn't comfortable having like a romantic or sexual relationship with, you know, an Oscar Wilde adult, you know, that it gets weird.
Yeah.
So yeah, but then like, as to sort of what I thought about it, I mean, look, to be honest, I spent a bunch of time on like the sexuality wiki, having a look, and kind of having a think about that kind of stuff. And like, just the main thing I wanted to do is make sure that I didn't fall into, you know, the stereotypes and tropes about asexual people. So, you know, like, honestly, it's just from, like, also following a bunch of people on Twitter, which, you know, for all of its sins is a good way to hear people who various backgrounds and stuff, and sort of just, like, paying attention to when those people were talking about their own experience with their own sort of way of being, and being like, okay, you know, and just kind of reading that and trying to internalise that, and then, you know, use that to inform how I played Zolf. Yeah, like, if I'm honest, it's not like a massively thought out thing beyond wanting to try and do right by it. That's really it, which is maybe not great, and maybe I got a bit lucky, but ultimately
it sounds like you did a lot of the work. Like, as in, you did, like, you were talking about doing quite a bit of reading and thinking and reflecting on stuff, and there were definitely times where you would begin saying something, like, in the while we were playing and then sort of pause because it was stuff that you wanted to give respect and thought to. Like, that was very... I don't know how obvious you thought it was, but I do remember a couple of times.
I just
want to think through this.
I do think like, it might be a little naive, but I do think you can achieve quite a lot with caring and also just applying some critical thinking every now and then. Like, a lot of it can come down to just being like, hang on a minute, let's think about this.
Yeah.
Care reading.
Yeah.
I think this sort of exposes... I'm going to struggle to articulate this one, so I ask people to bear with me because it may come out as gibberish. This sort of exposes something that's come up in... like other stuff I've worked on as well, which is erasing the line when originally conceived was more about power, responsibility, how that interacts with socioeconomics, where does responsibility end, where does personal responsibility trump certain types of morality, all of that kind of thing. And I'll admit that queerness wasn't in the original conception like a core piece of DNA. But A, if there's one thing I've learned over the years, it's that apparently the stuff I work on ends up turning queer regardless, which I think's fine. And it comes from a fact of... it's kind of hard not to, I guess. Yeah. The other thing, though, is recognising that the story you're telling, and in this case collectively telling... wants to be something and don't fight it as well. Mm. Where queerness kept coming up as a theme, it kept coming up as a point of discussion between characters, it kept being a thing that people were engaging in, and the options there were thankfully a nice, clear, correct and incorrect. The incorrect would be, no, that's not what this is about! This is about these things I originally said it's about! Or you can open-mindedly engage and expand and incorporate the things that keep coming up because that's what your players are presenting. It's what is clearly being told, even if that isn't necessarily what you originally thought you would be telling. But I'd say similar to Ben, I think I've been quite lucky in that I got to have all of these discussions in a public space where I was afforded the courtesy to continue to develop and learn. Because I think it would be incredibly stupid to say, yes, Alex knew everything on every topic that came up over the course of the last 5 years. And I consider myself quite lucky that over the course of this, I've been able to learn more. Not because I was wildly ignorant, but I just think I was occasionally naive, if I'm being very, very brutally honest. And it's been nice to be able to broaden that in a environment where we can explore these things together, I guess. I don't know if that makes much sense. I waffled a bit.
No, I think it does. I think it's also interesting that, like, to me, stories that tend to be about power and about how power affects people do often tend to end up being queer stories because of the way that the queerness is sort of socialized and politicized. It is a group that does not have much power, and so it just tends to automatically go together, I think.
Sure, that makes sense.
Or at least it can; those can be narratives that people can read into it easily as well.
Mm. I do think that having power hovering in the background, having these like large forces at work, it just gives a wonderful depth to and context to relationships. I mean, we specifically didn't, in the story, engage in talking explicitly about the ways that queer people are marginalised in, say, the real world, right? Like, while homophobia and transphobia nudge their heads up in the world in different bits, it's definitely a different world with different levels of different expectations, different levels of expectations and kind of models. And we engage with multiple different cultures that have different perspectives and use pronouns differently and have relationships differently. And it's just that it's wonderful to have a space where you can learn and explore and experience. Like, you know, I think that if Sel had grown up in an area that was explicitly transphobic, they would perform an experience their identity, like it would be impacted, right? The way that they behave and think about themselves. I would hope and kind of, it almost makes me emotional thinking, like, I would hope that they would reach the same level of confidence and joy in themselves, but like it would be a different path. And so it is just lovely to get to play people that experience less crap in a different world, a world that isn't perfect, absolutely not perfect, but is one that definitely is different. And that was lovely to do. That's another thing I'll miss. I mean, there will be other worlds that we'll play in or that we'll get involved in or like read about or whatever, but like it was a in many ways it was a like wonderfully thought out, and it was a wonderful world to kind of wander around in.
On that, then, I think that's a really sensible point to take a break, and then we'll come back in having had a reset and a bit of a rumination, I think.
Yeah, we're all like, oh, deep thoughts. Yeah. let's have a snack and reset.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And welcome back. Thankfully, this episode's running a lot closer to what I hoped. No nice things for Bryn.
I've asked most of my questions, and certainly most of the important ones.
But let's go again. Let's go again. See what we've got.
He's going to roll a 55.
Okay, let's have a look. 56.
Ooh.
I'm surprised. Yeah.
Oh, well, for being so close, I'd like to grant Bryn a question, actually, I think.
Yeah. Okay, so this is from Hiller Horizon, I think. Ben, what happened to the rope Zolf tied to Wilde? Did it get untangled off screen, or did you just forget about it? How do you think it would have played out differently if it had stayed? I don't know what this is referencing.
We tied ourselves together in the Garden of Yerlik, and then we took a massive bloody break in recordings, and we all completely bloody forgot about it.
Because Wilde was saying that he might get distracted and wander off.
He was going to wander off, and we were like, don't wander off. We tied ourselves together, and then we just never mentioned it again. Do you know what?
Wilde untied himself.
Probably chopped off by a knife fairy. That's it. That's what happened. Cannon. Knife fairy. Chopped it apart.
No, here you go. Wilde will have untied himself because Wilde is not a child. Wilde is a grown man, can look
Wilde
after himself.
Wilde could not undo Zolf's knots.
Actually, what happened, guys, is that the ritual that resurrected Sasha from her lich condition actually made her immortal, and she lived on to the present day, but she migrated to Russia, and whilst the rest of the party was in the Garden of Yerlik, she came with them, but she's so good at stealth now that no one actually spotted her, and she cut the rope between Wilde and then helped Wilde deal with some of his lingering emotions so that his experience inside the guilt plant between planes wasn't as bad as it otherwise would have been.
Okay, that's just a longer way of saying what I said. Knife fairy.
I love the fan theories. I love them so much.
There's more than just this as a gaffe throughout here. And no, I'm not going to list them all because I don't know them all. Mm. But I guarantee you it is... You should be astonished that the characters managed to keep the same names. Yeah. Okay? The level of... I've forgotten more than I've written about this campaign.
And to be clear, like, I did mock anger. I do really enjoy the how people, like, bend over backwards trying to make it make sense. It's a really fun, creative way to play with the story, and it's great, like, you know.
Yeah. I'm literally accessing my memory, and I'm going, okay, ropes, Yarlik, and I'm just going,
Yeah, there's nothing there.
I remember tying it, and then I remember nothing else.
The thing that makes it all make sense is that what the campaign actually is the story that is being written by Zolf and...
Oh, yeah, this is Zolf's incompetence.
I think Hammond is primary author on this.
Okay, but this is the story written by Hammond and Zolf, also drawing on notes that they rediscover in Rome that detail what Sasha and Grizzop were doing. And all of the errors in memory and
unreliable narrator.
Yeah, that's it.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's not a gaffe.
Oh, sorry, okay, no, we didn't.
Yeah, we've got a full fresh.
Just a big.
This is a masterful second-degree narration via Hammond and exposing his state of mind to make such an error.
And that's the point at which the child sat up with Hammond and was like, "Hey, Grandpa, are we getting to the kissing bit yet?"
And that's why all of the bits with Hammond's character make logical sense and completely follow the rules. Whereas, like, the other characters often...
That's why Hammond stayed in the carriage, whereas everybody else...
Yeah.
And Hammond wrote, and this cavalcade of idiots all just jumped out.
Cavalcade of idiots, by the way, is just... Absolutely. Okay, next question. So this one's number 11.
Doubles.
Doubles. And I'm really annoyed because I thought I'd hoped I'd dodge this one. What levels are Wild and some of the other combat-focused NPCs? They've lumped them all together. Some at Njörls, the other Ursine Druids, Augusta Ada. Has Wild leveled up during the campaign? What level was Augusta in the prologue? What type of caster was she, and what amazing attacks could she have performed? Okay. Lots to unpack. I'll try and get through it quickly. Wild leveled up, like, once through the entire campaign, because I have a thing I like to do as a GM, which is I like to introduce a nice, powerful character who stays static as everyone else grows, because it really starts to highlight, look how far you've come. So I really like doing that as a thing. So I think Wild did level up, like, once. As to his specific level, I genuinely can't remember. I'm thinking...
I get level 14 vibes off of him, I think. But...
I think it was around... I'd have to double check my notes. I think around 12-ish, 12-14.
I think I mechanically pegged it at some point due to an effect between 12 and 16.
Yeah, it's around there. You can tell what level he was at because of the bonus he gave through his bardic singing thing.
Well, that narrows it down to that window at least.
Mm. Yeah, I know that he was at the lower end of that window, so it'll be about 12 at that point.
Yeah.
I think maybe if I'm being generous, he might have started at level 10. Meeting the party and got to level 12 by the end, but I always make sure that my NPCs level a lot slower so that the group feels like it's growing.
I mean, the tank shenanigans in Paris, that was like a pretty powerful effect comparatively to us.
Yeah, so I think he blew... to be clear as well, Wild did one thing which makes it hard to gauge level, which is due to the way the game runs, but also I like it as a personality thing, is Wild spends spell slots from most to least expensive, regardless of the encounter. It's always, I'll do my big shiny thing immediately, and then keep working down. The reason being, the combats are that dense that you only get a couple of opportunities to do stuff, so make them flashy, you know? Beyond that, in terms of the other levels, Summit Njörl was stronger than Wild. The Ursine Druids were actually quite strong. They were quite powerful druids, actually. They were, I think, more powerful than the party, certainly, at that point. But I'd have to double-check my levels But they were pretty damn powerful.
Flying Wild shape is reasonably late, because obviously giving you fly at will is pretty good.
I got the impression they were at least 15 or 16.
Yeah, I had them pegged around 16, but not all of the druids were that level.
Yeah.
The youngest druid wasn't actually high level.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But like the elder ones definitely were high level. I would also say, in terms of other ones, Ada had, if I remember correctly, sort of profession levels. So there's some rules in Pathfinder for, like, civilians, where it's like, oh, you are the noble, you are the peasant, whoop-de-doo. But there is some more interesting stuff, like you are the scientist or whatever. Mm-hmm. So she didn't have class levels in, like, Artificer or anything like that. But I did... I dug in, but I did not really, like, go full hard rules as written. She basically had civilian levels in a few obscure things I found, which basically said... max skill ranks in a few things, and then you're basically just a generico person.
Well, if you want to build somebody who can't fight, you can't give them player character levels, because all player characters are horrifying in fights, even if they're like, I'm the nerd.
Absolutely. But the flip side of that is, if there's one thing I learned from the civilian system, it's that civilians are squishy.
Yeah.
Like, real squishy. Like, I couldn't have natural one fumbles be around civilians because it insta-kills various civilians.
It's almost like you shoot their knees off.
Exactly. Exactly. They're very squishy. And as for the last one, what type of caster was Augusta?
Well, and also what level was she? Because she was a boss encounter, right? So I think...
Yeah, she was a boss encounter during the prologue.
That Sasha skipped.
I'm really sorry, I don't remember.
Yeah.
Because I know that towards the end, I did level her up, but with loads of martial levels.
Yeah, she was, I think, something that is technically called Stabbered in the Back.
I'd have to double check. I genuinely don't remember what kind of casting Augusta was at the prologue. All I remember is I made the conscious choice that Augusta went basically hard martial after that point. But I'd have to double check.
She didn't get an opportunity to actually even start casting a spell, right?
I legitimately don't remember.
Did she even start? Or she just turned up and got knocked out, right? Immediately.
I don't remember. I think she started trying to cast a spell and didn't get a single spell out. And I think if I remember... This is going real, like, into the dim recesses of my memory, and I could be wrong. I have a vague memory that she may have been... Oh, my God. She may have been the only standard wizard you met.
Yeah. Mm. That would have made sense as early level in character.
Yeah.
Early level boss encounter.
I think that she was a low-level wizard who then went martial for the rest and ended up technically being a gish build, but not really, if anyone knows what that is. Okay, interesting question, but, yeah, I can't give more detail than that. Go on then, Bryn.
Clonk.
That's the thud of all of my...
I'm just rolling repeats now.
Good.
Okay, okay. What happened to Bola Smock? Were they killed by the Harlequins in Prague, or did they just die of old age?
The Harlequins attempted to assassinate Bola Smock and found Bola Smock was already dead.
Oh. So it was old age.
Of old age.
Yeah, Bola Smock died of old age, not hundreds of years ago, to be clear. Like, Bola Smock has, in the campaign world from the start, died recently. From the start of the campaign, Bola Smock's already dead.
Yeah.
Bola Smock died recently. The Harlequins made a play to be like, ha-ha, it's a corpse. Ah. Let's reevaluate. And that's when the party you're meeting them is after that. I didn't really think it... I considered making it a thing, a mystery you could uncover and so on, but actually it worked far better as just, yeah, this person's already dead, didn't you know? Like, it was more interesting that way. But yeah, they tried to kill him, but Bola Smock just died of old age. And I tried to make that clear in the Rome one, although my descriptions were a little
bit now. No, Bola Smock was the oldest. Yeah.
Which is that, like, the others were little dinkly wormlings, some of them. Like, Apophis was, like, quite young, whereas Bola Smock was already, like...
Apophis was like a little babus.
Yeah, whereas Bola Smock was like, I'm going to mess you all up straight
away. He's already an adult dragon. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Point,
so that's why Bola Smock has already aged out, and Apophis is actually getting to an elder aid state at that point. Good question, but yeah. Thankfully, I can answer that one.
I thought you would be able to.
If there's one thing with these Q&As I hate, it's that half of them are like, there is no answer to that question, and the other one is incredibly deep detail and nothing in between. Okay, okay, okay. 61. From Jasper Waymythical to everyone. Ooh, what do you think your characters would do if they lived in modern times? I.e., would they use social media? Would they like TV shows? That kind of thing. Like, what's the personality style of your characters in, like, modern real life,
the
I guess?
The coffee shop AU versions of our characters.
Yeah, absolutely. Lovely question.
Hamid would be an awful person, in my opinion. Because he'd never have to confront all his privilege.
Oh, he'd get siloed.
He'd be an influencer. And
he'd be in the echo chamber.
An unpleasant one, you know?
Well, that's better than I thought that there was a risk of him being, a young Tory.
I mean, no, but he'd be a young Tory influencer.
Yeah.
He'd be Darren Grimes.
No,
he'd be...
Actually, no, Hamid is more charismatic than Darren Grimes.
He'd be all about conspicuous consumption.
Yeah, he would. It'd all be the expensive
He'd
car.
Be like, hey, look how rich I am. Yeah. Look how much I enjoy all these fancy things that my money gives me access to. Because he'd never have to deal with, you know, this world is even worse in terms of protecting people with privilege, and he'd never have to deal or confront any of it. So he would have stayed the terrible child.
Oh my god,
began
I can see his Instagram. I can literally see his Insta where it's like the rack of Chateau de Neuf behind him, and he's just like living my best life and all that stuff.
In front of his golden Lamborghini.
Oh yeah, I totally see that.
I love him, but odd. This world would be bad for him.
Mm. Agreed. Absolutely agreed.
Grizzop would be just well into extreme sports.
He would! Yeah, you're right!
Yes.
Just well into it.
I can imagine Sasha kind of similarly. I can just imagine like the lock-picking lawyer type YouTubes.
Yeah.
Where like doesn't show a face, but is like, has a big following of just like doing complicated lockpick / mechanical things. Whereas Cell would, I can imagine them having other jobs than being like on social media. But now thinking about their social media presence, I like the idea of, yeah, Sasha as the lockpicking lawyer type thing, like breaking things open. And Cell is, you know, Tom Scott, and like halfway between that, like just finds a topic and just will ramble at you wonderfully for however long, somewhere between that and like Simone Giertz, where you're just coming up with these incredible builds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't think that Cell is as articulate as either of them. So it wouldn't be that big a channel.
I could see Cell of having a failed stint on Mythbusters.
Oh.
Where everyone was like, listen, you know your stuff and you're really interesting, but you're terrible on camera. You're just awful on camera.
They do really well in the auditions because they've got like quite a bit of sort of not charisma, but like energy. They do the int to car.
Absolutely.
Int to chest switch, but like it begins to fall apart when it's charisma focused. Yeah. We're doing like, who would they be? I genuinely am thinking about all of their like social media channels.
I won't do it for, say, Wild and other like fictionalized versions of real people, because I think that can get very muddy very quickly. I'm not diving down that rabbit hole. I'll do it for Ed though.
Yeah.
And Barnes and Carter.
Ed.
No, can't do Carter.
Ed absolutely would run a gym that has a dessert bar. And when asked, he'll be like, working out's fun, dessert is fun, you have the two together. And he would just be completely like, not see the irony, and it would be a really popular gym. Like, absolutely, he'd be doing really well for himself.
But technically, you can't have Ed, because wasn't he like
a Plantagenet?
Yeah. Or was he a completely fictitious Plantagenet?
I think he was a descendant of real people rather than a real person.
He wasn't. Okay,
yeah,
he was actually.
He was a very, very. I'm okay with
Ed. Yeah, sure.
And as for Barnes, I think Barnes is going to be a rather boring answer, which is Barnes still would have been in the military.
Yeah.
So as a result, I don't mean that in a like negative way. Just he would just be as different as anyone who is in our military versus a meritocratic Navy would be. And I know that's not a particularly exciting answer, but that's the truth. But yeah, Ed definitely runs a gym with a dessert bar. I'm very certain of that.
I think Zolf would be a very sad teacher.
Oh god.
A sad, tired teacher. I get that energy.
For some reason, I think chemistry, and I don't know why. I think that might just be anecdotal experience.
Azu would probably be like either a physiotherapist or like an actual therapist.
Agreed.
And if she was going to have a social media, she'd have one of those like TikTok accounts where it's like, here's how to recognize when you're catastrophizing, and like do like a little pointing to if you do this.
Yeah, I know exactly the one you mean. Yeah.
She'd be dancing at some point.
Doing a little dance. One of those accounts where like they do a little dance and point at text appearing on the screen.
Amazing. Oh,
if we're doing specifically social media, Zolf would be one of those accounts where he just like really deadpanly debunks people saying stupid stuff.
Yeah. I also think in her spare time, Azu would she'd do something like you know, kung fu or jujitsu, something like that.
Oh, absolutely. I like that.
That is one of the reasons that I like paladins. The like the inherent contradiction in that, like they are healers, and but they are healers with a gun. They're a doctor who has a gun.
I shoot you better.
Do no harm unless you all deserve it.
And I like that.
Interesting.
So yeah.
Good question. I like that question. That was a fun one. All right. I think we've got time for a couple more. Let's see where we get. 91. Whoa, we're getting quite niche on that one. All right. Scaredy crow. Okay, this is a question to everyone, but about Wild. What kind of an animal do you think Wild would be in the Ben Quest sort of root special if he had been part of it?
Oh.
Ferret.
I'd go skunk.
I think some kind of bird.
Bird. Ooh, hot take.
Yeah. Like a peacock, maybe.
Sort of like iridescent, but also very quick and clever. So magpie, jet.
Yeah, actually, magpie. I'm wondering maybe, like, if you know much about minks, a mink.
So like a big ferret.
Yeah, yeah. But minks are like... The mischievousness of ferrets, from what I understand, the mischievousness of ferrets like dial to 11.
Or maybe a stoat.
So tiny.
Yeah, I think I'm on the same page as Ben.
Basically, they mustelid vibes.
You've been very quiet, Bryn. Any thoughts?
No, I'm afraid I don't think about animals enough, but also I'm not familiar enough with what animals exist in that setting.
Bryn does not engage in the furification.
Your loss. Okay, next question. This is, 19. Oh, we've already had it. Bryn won. No. Boo.
What was up with the different Einsteins? What happened to the real Einstein, and what was the fake Einstein, and which Einstein was which?
Okay, yeah.
Okay.
In the London safe house right at the end.
Now, I need you to know, I've written all this out and I have it all lined up, but it has also been, 6 months? Mm. So you're going to have
Not quite, but not far off.
Yeah, you're going to have to give me a chance to line stuff up in my brain. You all returned from Svalbard with the real Einstein.
Ah.
You all got into the... Let me get this right. It does fit, but it was unnecessarily complicated, and I didn't mean it to be, but it just became that. You came back with the real Einstein, but you met a false Barrett.
What?
Oh.
You went into the situation... That was why Barrett was being soups weird.
Right.
You went into the situation, like into the lab or whatever. While you were sleeping, Einstein basically had to go out for a thing. If you'd have asked questions of various people, they'd have been like, oh yeah, Einstein headed out. And I think someone mentioned that Einstein headed out and then came back in. He never came back in. The fake Barrett went into Barrett's room, can go all gloopy, and then later turned into Einstein and was f***ing around as Einstein.
Oh, I didn't realize he was a shapeshifter. You also swore
you
again.
You said f*** again.
Oh, I did.
You
are
really out of practice.
I'm so out of practice. I apologize. But yeah, so it had a shapeshift ability that never really came up. I can now say what it is, though, because I said at the time I couldn't say what it is.
Oh, yeah, what is it?
Let me make sure I'm pronouncing it right, but I think it was a Meslan, mechanically speaking, which is super obscure, but a really horrible, horrible little creature.
I saw at least one fan guess that, I think.
So the Einstein that Grark and Hamid met was the fake one. And then what about the mobile stone call while we were at Chaucer's? Was that the real
that
Einstein?
That was from the real Einstein being like, what's going on? Everything's going weird.
Yeah.
And was the ringing from outside the safe house also Einstein? Because we did guess that, but we were like,
yes,
we
it was. That
even
was
if
Einstein
it is, we
being
can't
like,
take the risk.
Why is no one letting me in? I went out to get milk and now I can't get in. What's happening? And then Einstein is the one, because it came up in the epilogues, who was like, basically started searching around being like, why can't I get in? That's Barrett's corpse. That's what that is.
Oh, they're like... The Meslans are basically the Terminator 2 Terminator.
Terminator 2, yeah. So Meslans are, in the original like Pathfinder lore, they are like a designed weapon where they take a person who's like skilled at martial and then goopify them into a Terminator 2.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Right.
It is CR14, in case you were interested.
That was really a really difficult encounter. Mm.
And I boosted the CR even more, if you remember why, a bunch of additional contextual factors.
Oh, the knockout gas, which took out a lot. Yeah, that was
Yeah. But Meslans, I thoroughly recommend for anyone who wants to punish their party unnecessarily.
We were a level 11 party, and then you threw that encounter at us, and then a ancient gold dragon.
I absolutely over CR'd the ending. You deserve to struggle.
And we survived.
Well, and yet Zolf died, but GM Fiat to get a good story. Because I wasn't surviving.
You were in your unconscious HP, not your dead.
Then I took falling damage.
Mm. Yeah, your boots would have kept working even after you passed out.
Oh. And you fell out of the world into splishy extra plane of water, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, but that's the GM fee.
A little bit. Okay, 62. Last couple now. Jenna, how long did the session for the final battle take you to play?
The finale took so long.
Do you mean like a final battle, as in the several episodes?
So let's answer. Like, I think they were getting at how long did the final battle take, but I think we should answer for the finale as well.
Yeah, the battle was all right. The battle was sort of real-ish time with a lot of rules looking up. But no, I think it was all
right.
There was
a lot of rules looking up.
I think, honestly, like having sort of looked at the edit side, the battle at our end ran much longer than what came out the other end. But due to the level of complexity, it became like, I do this thing. Oh, no, wait, because of... So like there was the bit where... I forget. There was something that kept saving everyone over and over again, like a fact I forgot. Or
it was Azu's the I'm angry. What was Azu's buff that gave everyone?
So there was
a
lot of like, okay, this happens. No, I forgot this thing. Oh, we go back. This happens. No, we forgot this thing. Oh, okay, we go back. This thing.
By that point, there were so many bonuses stacked that were affecting everyone differently because they stacked differently with our equipment and spells and character building.
And there were some distance auras that we could enter and leave. And
I'd cast prayer or holy whisper or something like that.
So, you know those waves that were coming off Babbage? They were meant to have multiple varying effects. However, things got that complicated. I started to dial back on the complexity just because I was like, this is a lot. Like, this is a lot. Yeah. So I'd say the battle ran very, very long. But the finale episode as well with, like, the extra plane entity and blah, 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 that one rang very, very long as well.
That was a horrible recording. It came out pretty good, but it was
You have to get it right.
Recording.
That's the problem. Yeah. Is you don't have the luxury of being like, close enough.
I just remember there being a lot of tiredness in the virtual room as well for unrelated reasons. Like, unfortunately, multiple of us were not feeling our best that day. Mm.
And also, I think, like, we ended up... Like Hammond and Zolf ended up having another argument, and then we went, "No, that's you can't do that."
Well, so I remember taking the most time was because the finale was so talky, and we wanted to get it right. We would be like, "Oh, actually, I think that I would say this instead," or "I think actually I would react in this way." So we were redoing and going down different branches of conversation quite a lot.
That's the hardest bit is redoing improv'd conversations. You're like, we've got to hit the beats. We can't just repeat ourselves. We can't remember. And then it's like, so where were we? How far back do we go? Are we reintegrating ourselves? Like, it must have been a nightmare.
Yeah, it's one of those ones where I think the end product came out as good as we could have really hoped. Like, that's what you want, really. I'd say, genuinely, I came out of that one, the recording session. Yeah. Any recording you can walk away from. That's what post is for. Anything you can walk away from.
I think it was the wrong decision for them to cut 3/4 of my references to the pinned butterfly metaphor. Like, if anything, it wasn't repeated enough. Mm.
But in contrary to the finale, I would say the epilogues were wonderful to record, and I found those, not just because you were all doing the work, much easier. Like, those were a genuine pleasure to be like, oh, what happened to these people, etc., etc. It felt way more organic, way more natural, whereas the finale was a little bit crafted.
Because the thing is, the redoing continued even to the end, because then we had to deal with the fact that there was no magic, and we had to remember all the different things we had that were activated by magic.
Oh, we did the ending like 4 times, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
It was something like
that. Because I walked away in the first one and then went, no, wait, I can't do that.
Yeah.
There was a whole thing where, like, Cell turned... it was like, I said, does Cell still have their wings? And you said no. And I said, okay, Cell turns into a bird and flies up. And we got a couple of sentences into that before you're like, wait, no, no, No.
The level of confusion in this explanation, multiply it out 1,000 times. Yeah. That was what it was like.
I still think the call on Brutal reverting to a normal dog is inconsistent with the interaction of other previously established effects as well, but we'd got so confused around ourselves.
I think that's a justifiable stance, but also tough. Yeah.
Think of the carnage under that alpine mountain.
Oh my god, it's just like a zoo got just dumped into a
cave.
That's
look awful. At the shiny. It's look so at the upsetting. Shiny over here.
It's very bad.
Don't look over there. Look at the shiny over here. Look at all. Look. Everyone's having a lovely epilogue. Just shut up.
Yeah, all we're going to say is it ain't blooming Zootopia in there, all right?
No, I think the answer to that question is like each of like the last run of episodes was like 1.5 to 2 hours.
Yeah. But then the epilogues we did, and I was like, oh, yes, this is why I enjoy role-playing again.
Oh, here you go. I've got it. It wasn't carnage because the transformation had a small tail end of, like, residual sapience enough for them all to just wander off and be happy. Let's not examine any ramifications for that and move on. There you go. Job done. Same way that Prague University just drifted really gently downwards with no consequences.
That's how the fly spell ends.
I did check that in fairness, so yeah.
How does the fly spell end when all magic disappears, though?
Because it doesn't disappear in one instant. It gradually fades out of the world while we were unconscious.
That was written in your brief. We did not do an Ultron. Very explicit.
We did not squelch Prague.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bloody squelch the world having that hit the ground.
Yeah.
Okay. 45, Chekhov's marbles. What has been your favourite thing about remote recordings? What do you miss about in-person recordings? My favourite thing about this, I'll go straight out the gate. It's a lot easier to run a game like this. Mm. I've got all of my screens, I've got all my online stuff, I've got all of the stuff. So as a result, the whole, oh, wait a moment, I'll check this book. Move, I've got to get to that book. No, move. I've got, oh, wait, it's underneath that. What, like, all of that's gone. I fully converted, and as a result, it made running it much quicker. And that's just straight out the gate an obvious one at my end.
Mine's easy. Don't have a 5-hour round commute. Yep.
True. I do nice. Appreciate the not. Yeah. I had an easy one, and it was 3 hours round. Yeah.
I mean, I absolutely don't ever begrudge this, but like there were a couple of times where I turned up at Alex's house and it was like, yeah, we're not doing the recording because something's come up, like an emergency's happened and stuff. And I was like,
I
guess
worst.
I'll go home then.
That was
which
the
is
worst.
Fine, you know, that's like, yeah, whatever. You pay for the travel.
So. I really appreciate being able to have a glass of drink right by me and not worrying about like knocking it over onto someone else's equipment and ruining everything.
And
I'm only receiving
thing,
myself. And also, if I take a sip and it's a slightly noisy sip, I know it's only on my track and that can just be silenced.
Absolutely.
Not having to stop to cough. Not being like, stop room, shut up.
Oh, I forgot that. We had to do the signal of, like, everyone stop everything.
It's also, it's not so hot.
The temperature, God.
Like, by the end, like, with five people in a sound-insulated room with the window shut.
Nightmare.
Where we are, like, let's be honest, like, dispersing a lot of hot air between us. like, even on, like, autumn and spring days where, like, it's the UK, it is not hot. It got sweaty. And then during the height of summer, it was like horrific.
I mean, the stink in that studio.
I'm surprised. I wouldn't be surprised, rather, if like that room still smells now.
It does. It's a problem. Foam absorbs smells.
We have become far too familiar with each other's body odours.
But if I ever miss any of you, I just go over to a wall, lick it, and it's like...
Awful. Awful.
In terms of negatives, apart from the obvious of like it's nice human contact, you know, it's quite pleasant. I as a GM don't like if you're playing at this level, don't underestimate how much body language matters. You can really tell if someone's uncomfortable, you can tell if someone's mentally checked out, you can tell if someone's thinking about something else or if something's going to be a problem, and you can read that body language if you're good at it, and it's one of the few things I can do, and you can read that body language easily. On remote call, depending on how someone's got it set up, you are reading someone's nose and eyebrows. it's just like, great, I have no insight into you as a result, and that makes it trickier. I think there's been a lot more explicit discussion in video where someone will put their hand up and go, I am feeling this thing like right now. I would like to therefore do this thing, whereas previously we'd have all just kind of instinctively recognised it from body language.
Which being explicit is not necessarily a bad thing.
No, it's not a bad thing at all, but the missing element of body language as a GM puts a little bit more conscious effort into keeping tabs on people and active check-ins, I guess.
I like role-playing over... I know a lot of people have to, but like personally, I much prefer role-playing in person just because of that. Because you can like stand up and walk around and do silly jokes and And also you can cross-talk. Obviously, we don't do that in the show, but when you're on a call doing a game, you cannot cross-talk because everybody's getting the same volume of person in their ears all the time.
And it's horrible,
And you can't really do secret things. You can't whisper to someone, why wouldn't it be fun if we did this? I will say what I like about remote recording is that I can look things up. So similarly to you, Alex, I can have like whatever the Pathfinder web D20 PFSL futter, I can have that open and look things up and read things out.
Yes.
It makes me look less stupid. I stop putting countries in the wrong place. Well, do it.
Yeah, having the tabs with all the spells you're going to use in the combat open is really handy.
Yeah.
I really liked the fancy battle maps, the online ones.
Yeah.
I do think the recording suffered a bit. Especially when we first started using those, because we weren't describing stuff very well.
It's over there by the thing.
Rockable for the audience. But that was a problem when we used even the hand-drawn
minifigs.
I miss minifigs. Mm. I am a sucker in RPGs for a good minifig. Even if we're just playing on a blank battle map, like I love having the... Here's the thing.
It was so fun, like, hodgepodging it, especially doing those with Sasha's acrobatics. Like, at what level is everyone?
I enjoyed when Hamid flew and us being like, okay, so how many dice do we balance the
hand? Yeah. And he'd be like 6 feet off the table.
No. The best solution was we used empty little cuboid
dice boxes,
which are see-through, and you can stack them quite easily because they're cuboids, and so this actually makes it look like someone's up in the air just enough to help maintain the illusion.
I do miss that.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think this is our final question from time. I'm going to give people an option. I can roll again if you want the boring, bad option. Option B, I'll let you all just agree on a number and we can answer that question. Or option C, you can all take a gamble and have a Bryn question to finish on. Ooh.
So the split between question one and question 69.
I'm voting for question one.
I think that has been decided by popular...
Yes, okay.
Okay, I'm feeling
69,
generous.
Do it for the vine. 69, do it for the vine.
I'll do you a favour then. We'll do 1 and 69 if we're quick about it.
Okay.
All right. Question one, the most asked question.
Can we all guess what it is? Can we guess what question one is?
Go on, what do you think it's going to be?
Why?
Alex, what's wrong with you?
I think that's high up there, but no.
Alex, who was your favourite character?
Me.
I see. Right. Yeah, Alex's favourite character is Alex.
Yep.
Bryn, you got a...
Okay. Any guesses?
My guess was what's Wild Scar already?
That's question three.
Okay.
So question one. This is for everyone. What is something about your character's backstory, or in Alex's case, the world, that just didn't come up, and that you, and ideally that you haven't told the others yet? I will say one at my end to start, which is a world one, which I can now say, and I'm glad that the northern stuff came up. And this, I think, was another question lower down. There was a couple of questions of, Australia's a penal colony? That seems wildly out of touch. Let's deconstruct that, shall we? The Northern Wastes. Northern Wastes in bunny ears. Was Australia a penal colony? It was a very short-lived and failed attempt that the meritocrats covered up, and is become there is a thriving population down there, both of indigenous and non-indigenous, and the penal colony failed almost immediately, but meritocratic communication was just like, yes, this thing is over there, don't look, Don't look at that society that is flourishing without us, because it's definitely not there. It was one of their biggest failures, and I'd hoped it might find a way to come up, because otherwise it just sounds like the story was wildly, like, weird there. But it was a similar situation to the Northern Waste, meritocratic propaganda. But that's the one thing I was like, I really want that to come up, but no. All of the ins never triggered.
I've said most things. I think I had a bit of an idea of, like, what Sasha was doing while she was at Rake Finds, of, like, trying to escape and then Barrett's agents finding her, and continually, like, she would find friends and Barrett would undermine that or destroy that or threaten the friends, and yeah, it took a while to work out that it was the ring. And so that was just something that I think I mentioned in the notes, like, as an aside, but that she occasionally would kind of try and make friends or leave for a while and wasn't able to. But I had that quite developed in my head as, like, a particularly traumatizing thing of trying to branch out, or even, like, climbing over rooftops and making friends with, like, people who were living in the kind of garret, in a similar sort of way to the, like, Peter Pan type thing, of someone coming through the window and, like, in this posh area, and then be like, oh, hello, it's our magical assassin friend. And always, like, Barrett finding out where she'd been and ruining it.
An actual conspiracy to keep Sasha lonely.
Yeah, like, basically. But it not being in a... But in a very achievable way. Like, he's got a tracking device on her, basically. Yeah. And yeah, it's very possible to kind of just send goons to a place and make sure that she can't get through a door, or she can't do a thing, or doesn't see those people anymore. That was like the only thing, because when I get excited about stories, so I tell everyone everything all the time. But I absolutely do not understand how Alex kept as many kind of secrets as he did, because I think I even asked you in, like, the first couple of years, like, how are you doing this? Like, how do you, like, when you know that there are things out there that we can't see?
The key is writing it down and forgetting it, and then only opening the books later and trying to remember what it was.
Yeah, I guess that's one way.
So I've just pulled up the backstory. It's called a basic character backstory, Azu V3.
Nice. That is a good, solid title. Love it.
So I think I would have loved to have gone more into the paladin that brought Azu into the Temple of Aphrodite.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The dwarven paladin, she was called Zugi Brightheart.
Zugi? Yeah, I really, really wanted to introduce Zugi Brightheart, but it just never quite lined up.
Yeah, yeah.
I regret that. I'd like to have
Zugi. I really wished we'd got a chance to talk to Chinua when he showed up when we were on the Bear.
And couldn't trust
him. He has to quarantine. We have to go.
Off we go.
That hurt. That physically hurt me, by the way.
But
I totally logical, completely made sense. And the second that you said that, I was like, well, obviously, Alex, come on! Damn it! God.
I also just realised that there is a through line, because one of the things you asked us to write was, like, what's the best thing they've ever done? And I wrote down the best thing she ever did was manage to deliver a baby and save the mother without losing either of them. Aww. And now she ended up running, like, a clinic, a pregnancy clinic.
Maternity
thing.
Clinic.
Yeah.
Yeah, really nice.
And I'd completely forgotten about that. So yeah, that's cool.
I think the only backstory thing was something I talked about last Q&A about the one NPC that never came up who was sworn to revenge himself upon Hammond. But I do have two.
They are actually around the world. Like, they've been chasing you. They're just not very good at it.
Where in the world is Hammond Salah Harun al-Tahan?
I do have two others. After the recording session where we met Chaucer and we hung out with Chaucer.
Oh, yeah!
I wrote some notes in character as Hamid for the rest of the party. and messaged Alex saying Ahamed has written these in secret. He wants to leave them with Chaucer so that if he doesn't survive the final battle, but the rest of them come back to Chaucer, they can find these letters. Aww. And I wanted to do it in an authentic way as possible, so I never told or discussed it with the rest of
it
you.
Was
I
was just really like, artfully done.
If it happens Aww. In that exact way, they can organically find this. If not, no worries. And obviously it didn't play out that way at all. But yeah. The last one I want is something I really wanted to happen in Epilogue 3. In Epilogue 2, Hamid talked about missing flying. Mm. And we'd agreed that in Epilogue 3, Cell would have invented something like either hang gliding or paragliding behind a boat, and that it would be an activity they did together because they both used to love flying. Mm. Yeah. And it just didn't come up. And that's fine. But it can still be canon.
Canon, it was happening. They just didn't
It just didn't mention it. Just didn't
I
come
loved
up
that
during
detail.
The Epilogue 3,
it was so beautiful.
But it is definitely canon. Which because I love that as a moment, a way for Cell and Hammond to rebond 20 years later, basically, to fly together again.
I absolutely loved that detail. That was almost my favourite in the entirety of the epilogues. Loved it. So, Ben, I have all the characters and all of the families that never turned up, Meredith. Any other secrets we don't know about?
Well, I didn't actually write any backstory for Tjelvar, so who knows about that? I've been having a read through, like, Zolf, I think we broadly covered everything. I mean, there's something that didn't come up. I don't know if, like, it's something that nobody knows about, but, like, after he was in the Navy, he joined a pirate crew of a ship called the Sea Troll, and that was an NPC, the Captain Erica Brynholm, that never got brought up.
I was toying with them being at Svalbard.
Yeah.
When you visited Svalbard. Didn't come up because of the shape of the story, but I was really toying with introducing them in Svalbard.
Yeah. So just that's a thing. I don't think that's like a secret, but it's just a thing that never got really mentioned. Mm. For Grizzop, again, like, not too much. Although, again, I might have told people, I can't remember, but like, I think one question that I see floating around is like, why is he so scared of drowning? Did I say anything about that?
I feel like that came up in the backstory.
Wasn't Grizzop the only survivor of like his clutch who drowned in like a tunnel?
Oh, I did say that. Yeah, I did say that. Fair enough. Yeah, yeah. So in which case, like, I think I've pretty much covered everything.
There is one fun abandoned plot line that occurs to me as well that I don't think I've ever mentioned. To be clear, not in the story. Like, this was one of those sandbox ideas that got abandoned very quickly. I did toy with the logistics of having Sasha distantly related to Bertie.
Oh.
So that when it came to, like, inheriting titles, it'd be like, hey, Sasha, guess who's the next heir? it didn't pan out that way, and I'm glad it would have been the wrong move for the character, but I did be like,
though.
Oh, Sasha's parents could have been on the Sea Troll, which sank them, and as in, like, on a ship that the Sea Troll attacked, and therefore there's a connection to Zolf, and then therefore, that's why there's no explanation, but actually he's a great, great related cousin, but no. No, that all kind of died on the vine.
I'm glad
that
didn't happen, but it's funny.
Oh, yeah, it's a worse story choice, but that's one I've never mentioned where I was like, that could be fun and crazy, but yeah, fun and kooky, but it never really came off. Okay, I think that's a nice closer then. Thank you all for joining me on our Q&A. I think we have one more after this one, but not immediately after this, so that people have had a chance to listen to the epilogue and the third epilogue and have their final questions. This was an enlightening for me as it was for other people, I think. I learned a lot. Anything anyone wants to say before we disappear for another week?
Oh, sorry about question 69. Maybe we can save it and answer it next time.
Maybe we'll do it next time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about 69. 69 well, also, has been denied
to you. We'll do it
next
time.
You forgot about 69?
Oh, and it's a shame. 69 is a cracking question. We'll make sure we cover it next time. All right. Yeah. Until then, bye, everyone.
Bye!
Rusty Quill Gaming is a podcast distributed by Rusty Quill and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 4.0 international license. Today's episode was directed by Alexander J. Newell and produced by Hannah Preisinger. To subscribe, buy merchandise, or join our Patreon, visit rustyquill.com. Rate and review us online, tweet us at The Rusty Quill, visit us on Facebook, or email us via mail@rustyquill.com. Join our community on the Discord or via Reddit at r/rustyquill. Thanks for listening.
Hi everyone, it's Helen here, the voice of Azu, Enola and Laverne. Today, I'm here to tell you about Woe Begone, a podcast launched on the RQ Network. Woe Begone is a weekly horror sci-fi audio drama series about the nature of power and the implications of linear time. Woe Begone follows Mike Walters, who discovers a mysterious and violent online game. What begins as an exploration of an alternate reality game with real-life consequences quickly becomes a search for the technology that makes the game possible. Each episode has a unique soundtrack composed by creator and writer Dylan Griggs. Listen to Woe Begone, spelled Woe, period, Begone, wherever you listen to podcasts. Or check out woebegonepod.com for episodes and transcripts. Have fun, and see you later.